The next kina is kina Yud Aleph, and this is the oldest and most authoritative of all of the kinos. As the opening line says, V'yakonein Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. This is not from Elazar HaKalir, whenever he lived, or any of the other various paitanim throughout Jewish history. This is from the Navi. This is a kina that is written about the Navi Yirmiyahu, by the Navi Yirmiyahu, about Melech Yoshiyahu. And the story, as is alluded to in the various stanzas in the kina, describes, as we see in the second line, Ben Shmona Shana, Hechel Idrosh Me'elav. Who was this King Yoshiyahu? He had quite the life story. He is the grandson of Manasseh, and he took over after his wicked father, Amon, was like the wicked grandfather of Manasseh. The father was assassinated, and he was only 8 years old when he became king, as the kina mentions in that line. And as the kina describes how terrible things were, but nevertheless, 18 years later, he's doing repairs at the Beis HaMikdash, and suddenly they found a hidden Torah, you know, in behind some halal, behind some drop wall or something like that. And sure enough, he sees the Torah, and he opens it up, and as the kina itself describes, about halfway down, in my kina on the first page, it's about a quarter of the way down, b'chlal, Bitsa emraso b'arur asher lo yakim. The Torah that he finds just happens to be open to the pasuk in Devarim, arur asher lo yakim es divrei haTorah azos. And he was so taken by this that he said, alai lahakim. If the Torah is cursing anyone who doesn't hold up Torah, he says, I am going to do that. And the whole country was in a horrible spiritual situation. You have generations of generation, year after year of wicked kings. So there's tons of avodah zarah. Everyone is idolatrous. And he leads what was at the time and probably to this day the greatest tshuva revolution in history. However, as great as the story was, unfortunately, it didn't end on a high note. Because he got unfortunately too caught up in his own success. And he thought that he had been fully successful. However, as the kina describes, many of the people could not wean themselves off of Avodah Zarah. We, of course, cannot relate to the addiction to Avodah Zarah. We have our own addictions in our generation. But they had an addiction to Avodah Zarah. Some of the people were able to break the addiction, but some were not. And even though he had a complicated and a sophisticated system of checking to make sure that all these homes had rid themselves of Avodah Zarah, the Kina and Chazal and the Navi describe how certain people had made contraptions where they could hide their Avodah Zarah, so even when the king's policemen would come in, they wouldn't be able to find the Avodah Zarah. It had a secret compartment. And therefore, he thought that the situation was better than it was. Sometimes leaders think the situation is worse than it is. Everything's doom and gloom. He thought everything was great, and it turns out it wasn't so great. So, hey, for the most part, that's an innocent mistake. Until, as the Kina describes, the king of Egypt, this is in the stanza that begins with the letter Tet, Tovim Reim Nikro, Kishochu Malach. The king of Egypt sends a messenger. He promises peace. I don't want to have any fight with you, but I want to take my army in a fight that I'm having with Ashur, and I want to go through the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's a quicker way for me to go. Why should I have to go? Let me just go straight through. However, as it says in the stanza, begin with the letter Kuf, Kila Hamonai, Lalechet Aram Naharaim. He stubbornly did not let them go through. Why? Because he knows that the pasuk promises that if we do the right thing, Chevro Lo Savor Ba, not only will we have peace, we'll be in such a good situation that no one's even going to bring a sword passing through our territory. And he thought that he had achieved that. And even though the Navi told him, no, 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 let the guy pass, let the king of Egypt pass, he ignored the Navi, as we say in the next stanza, Lamed Lo Shama Lo Chose. He didn't listen to the Navi. And unfortunately, he was wrong. They weren't on that madrega. The king gets upset. Egypt wages war against Israel. And as the kina says towards the end, not only did they have this terrible defeat, the king himself dies a horrible death in battle. In the stanza beginning with the letter Ayin, we read, Chetz achar chetz, morim velo chatzim. They ambushed him, and eventually he was pierced with hundreds and hundreds of arrows. And he died, v'yizrkubo shalosh me'ot chitzim, 300 arrows. He died in a very, very terrible and horrible death. And even though he had thought that he was doing what was right, in his last gasps, in the next stanza below, Reish, Ruach safatav hivtza mipihu, with the last gasp of life with his lips, he said, Tzadik hu Hashem, Kimarisi pihu. He did tziruk adin. He recognized that he was right, wrong. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu was right to punish him because he, in fact, didn't listen to the Navi, and he got it all wrong. So this is an incredible story, a very, very powerful story about him and about his life. But Fetzach HaKasha, what in the world does this have to do with Tisha B'Av? So far, absolutely nothing. So this is another Chiddush of Tisha B'Av, or Soloveitchik emphasized, and this is the mourning of the individual. We don't just mourn the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. That's a misnomer, it's a mistake. We also mourn the loss of Jewish life, and we specifically even focus on the loss of even one life. As Stalin, Yimach Shemo, said, a million deaths are a statistic. One death is a tragedy. We all know this from experience. When you read about some horrible hurricane or tornado or whatever, sometimes it can be hundreds, thousands of people died, let alone the millions. Unfortunately, you're worried about, did the coffee just go off? Did the Yankees win? You can forget about it in 3 seconds when you hear about 10,000 people dying. When you read the story of one mother, of one child, of one fire, of one car accident, of one terrorist attack, so that stays with you. And that's the emotional and, you could say, philosophical, hashkafic lesson of this kina, that it's not just the big, but it's even the one person. And I'd like to spend a few moments not learning any sources, but before we do this kina, I'd like to speak about two individuals who died recently. The first one I'd like to speak about, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a few months ago. This was a Gibor Yisrael, Noam Raz, Hashem Yimkom Damo. Noam Raz died just, again, a short while ago, certainly since not that long ago at all. Noam Raz was 47 years old when he died. He was killed by terrorists near Jenin, because for over 20 years, he was a part of one of the leading officers in the Yamam, which is the elite counterterrorism unit of the police. And he was on a special mitzvah with part of the, I think it was Sayeret Golani, the Shabak, and Yamam. And they were going to a village that was right near Jenin, to arrest a number of really, really bad and dangerous terrorists. And in the course of that exercise, in that arrest of the terrorists, from the rooftops above, all the neighbors in the neighborhood started firing down on the Israeli forces. And this was on a Friday morning. And unfortunately, he was shot. They tried to rush him to the hospital and save him in Haifa, the hospital. But they're not able to save him, and he died there. Over 20 years, part of this elite unit, we can't even imagine, his officers, his commanders, talked about various stories. You know, they couldn't give the details, but of where he himself had literally saved lives. He had been a sniper at one point. He also learned how to become a chovesh, so he also was a paramedic in the unit. At his funeral, one of the commanders talked about a previous very dangerous arrest where another Israeli soldier was injured, and he was actually able to save him. People testify he was in his free time, because, you know, why not? He was also a Hatzalah volunteer, and who knows how many people he saved over the years. He wasn't famous. Until he died, how many people even knew he existed? His family, his friends, his co-workers. But he was a hero. At his funeral, not that it matters per se, but just to make the pain a little bit closer to home for us, he was dati. His wife had a big mitpachat on at the funeral. They had six children. They have six children. None of them are that old. My age, my generation, 47 years old. I still think that's young. His wife, Efrat, at the funeral, this is heartbreaking, you can see the video, she said the following, turning towards her husband, Toda shebacharta bi liot ishtecha. Thank you for choosing me to be your wife. Toda al hayiladim shemikochacha v'hem hochim v'nihim domim lecha. Thank you for our children who are and who will be like you. Toda al esrim shanim tovot yachad. We are married 20 years, 20 good years. Thank you for the 20 years. Shezeh kol kach harbei v'zeh kol kach ma'at. This is the world that we live in, a wonderful, dedicated, wives and mothers have to eulogize their husbands in the prime of their lives with such painful words. One of his sons, who's a little bit older, was crying at the funeral, talking about his youngest brother, who was not yet bar mitzvah. Why should Naveh not be able to learn with you for his bar mitzvah like all the other brothers did? There's just one person. We never heard of him until he died, most of us. Many of us already forgot the name. By next Tisha B'Av, for sure. Because there's so many tzaras that they all blend into one. But it's important on Tisha B'Av to pick out the ones and to focus on them, not because they're more important than anybody else, but because we need to focus on one to give us a feeling for all of them. Every person is an olam malei. Chazal taught us that. And here you see, there's one guy. It's not going to change the geopolitical direction of anything if he had lived or died. Not for better or for worse, let's be honest. And yet for his family, for his wife, for his children, it's mamash achurban. Their whole lives are never going to be the same now. I want to mention one other personality who also recently died in a completely different context and story. Rene Slotkin. Rene Slotkin died on the Upper West Side as a very, very old man. Why is it important? Why was there an article in the Jerusalem Post that I read all about him? He died less than a month ago. He died in July. Because when he was 3 years old, he and his twin sister were deported along with their mother to Theresienstadt. And 2 years later, they were deported to Auschwitz as one of Mengele's twins. Mother was killed right away, and the twins were taken by Mengele for experiments. I think they say there were a few hundred such twins where they would do experiments. I don't know exactly the details, and if I did, I probably couldn't bring myself to describe them. On one of the sets of the twin, in order to test, they're so similar now, let's see if we do X or Y. Rahman al-Islam. So he was separated from his sister, and they bore the brunt of these experiments. And yet, incredibly, miraculously, both he and his sister survived. But they were separated. He was sent with a family to Czechoslovakia, where they were originally from, and his sister actually was given over to Christians. But eventually the joint helped find her, and they brought her out. I don't know if this is like Rabbi Eliezer Silver's song, Shema Yisrael, Shwaki might have gotten involved, or not, but it was one of those stories where a Jew was sent to the Christians and was actually saved. She was eventually brought to America, and a beautiful family in Long Island, the Slotkins, adopted her, a Jewish family from Long Island. At some point after they adopted her, she told them, you know, I'm a twin. I don't even know if he survived, but I had a twin brother. We were together in Auschwitz. I guess she knew her mother was killed, but she didn't know what happened to her brother. And this incredible family, they didn't just adopt this young child who was a Holocaust survivor. They hired a PI and they sent them to Europe to look for the son. And they found him living with Goyim. They found him. And they were able to bring him back to America, and they adopted him too. And they grew up, hadn't seen each other in 6 years when they were reunited. A number of years ago, there was a movie that was made about them. And when he was still alive, she had already passed away. And he talks about the reunion that they had. Incredible. After college, he enlisted, and he was actually in the United States Army, one of the handful of survivors of Auschwitz who then were in the United States Army. And they described in his hesped how he was very proud of the fact that even all the time he was in Georgia, wherever he was stationed in the U.S. Army, he was always Shomer Shabbos and wore a yarmulke. Not a pashut thing. Anyway, he lived most of his adult life on the Upper West Side. He was a long time and dedicated member of Ohev Tzedek, of OZ. Everyone there remembered him as a regular in Minyan and in Daf Yomi. And I think he was a PE, he was a physical ed teacher in some of the day schools. I think he was in the world of Chinuch. He wasn't a Rav though. But he lived an incredible, incredible life. And he survived. He just died a few weeks ago. And he survived by 4 children, 11 grandchildren, and 1 great-grandchild. That's one person who died. One survivor of the Holocaust. 1.5 million children didn't survive, but he survived. But he's a hero. Someone who went through as a child what he went through, and he was able to rebuild his life with not only physical health, enough to have children, to be married, but emotional health. Everyone talked about how wonderful and happy he was. Unfortunately, his sister died much before him and was unhealthy, and he assumes that his sister had much worse experience than he did. And that's, he thinks, why his sister had a harder physical life. But these are kedoshim. The fact that Hitler didn't get a chance to kill him, he was also a gibor. A gibor in a different way than Noam Raz, but a gibor. And this year on Tisha B'Av, we have at least two less giborim than we had last year Tisha B'Av. Whether they're in New York and Manhattan on the Upper West Side, or whether they're living in Binyamin, which is where Noam Raz lives. He had started a yeshuv there. And chaser lanu. Objectively, we are chaser, and subjectively, we have to feel chaser. And hopefully this kina helps us get in touch a little bit with the individuals who are really the story of our history and the story of our lament on Tisha B'Av.